This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Donald Trump is in France right now. He is doing a news conference with President Macron. Somebody just asked him, hey, your son took this meeting with this woman who said that she represented the Russian government. Now, the Russian government, of course, is saying no, she doesn't. And in fact, I think she's saying now she knows she doesn't. So who lied to whom, where and how? But anyhow, they asked the or maybe she did. And, you know, let's get to the bottom of this. But in any case, your son took this meeting and people in your own party say he should have called the FBI. What do you think? And Trump is like, well, nothing happened. It was no big deal. And then, then they toss it to Macron. But, you know, Macron and Trump are, you know, they're trying to make it friendly. But the line that really got me was Trump saying, I did a great service for my country by appointing Christopher Wray, right, as head of the FBI. Oh, yeah, it's all about Trump. It really is. It's all about Trump. It's Anything Goes Summer. Kelly in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Kelly, thanks for listening to SiriusXM. What's on your mind today?
Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it very much. I'm an example of Lyndon Johnson's war on poverty. I was born in 1959, rural Colorado, very poor. I was a first graduate of Head Start. I got my family, I was a single mom kid, we got blocks of cheese, canned beef and powdered milk to drink. I went to elementary school. I'm telling you this just to give you an example. And I was allowed, because I was a good student, to go out early for lunch to wash dishes to earn my lunch in the public school. So what I'm telling you is I had an opportunity. I also had an opportunity for education. I got to go to school on scholarship because I worked so hard for it. Not that anyone gave it to me. I say all of this because I think that what we're going through today is has so many roots. It's education, it's community, it is nutrition. And I can remember struggling very hard but loving what I did because I had the opportunity. And I know I'm just one example, but I'm an example that got 2 degrees. I give back to this world, and I shake my head. I cried when Ronald Reagan was elected into our government. Now I see the meanness. But then I also go back to where I'm from, that rural area. It's not getting any better. It's getting worse. And I would just link it. I read a wonderful article in The New Yorker a few weeks ago on West Virginia and the opiate problem. It's the same thing there, lack of education, nutrition, letting us just make a living, and it's getting worse. I see it. I'm old. And so I would just like to comment that this isn't just a real quick fix thing. This is so ingrained by the Republicans, and they want to strip more our health care. It's very hard. I'm very actively involved politically. I give back to this world, and I think other people from me who were helped by the Johnson years also give back. So we all need to stand up and do something.
One of the things that we know from the GI Bill, which I just have to take a sip here. One of the things we know from the GI Bill, which provided low-income loans for returning soldiers to buy homes, my dad did that, and which also provided free college education to returning soldiers. My dad did that for 2 years until he had to drop out because mom got pregnant with me. But in any case, what we know from that is every dollar invested in the GIs who came back from World War II produced $7 in additional tax revenue that would not have there if those people had not had access to better education and better neighborhoods.
And that is true. And I can guarantee I gave every penny and thousands more because of what Lyndon B. Johnson, the Democrats, and my community was willing to invest in me.
Right.
And I continue to give back. Understand that. And I would just recommend, this is silly of me, but I'm in education. I liked, it is called The Educated Imagination by Fry. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a wonderful book. It's old. I hope it's still in print. But I think education is so very important. What I don't understand is the meanness and how I can go back to this rural community that I am from, and they all vote for Trump. I blame a lot of that on lack of education.
I don't disagree. Although I blame a lot of it on Fox News. I mean, there's a media company that is ubiquitous and that is billionaires, you know, supported and is just like, you know, not a good force in our dialogue in this country, in my opinion. Kelly, thank you for sharing your story. I really can identify it. When I was 5 years old, my dad, my parents moved to, they moved to Lansing, I guess when I was four, but I remember five. And my dad was making a living as a door-to-door Rexair salesman. It was a vacuum cleaner and a door-to-door World Book Encyclopedia salesman. And he was not making it. He was just barely getting by. And I remember my dad and mom taking me and my brothers down, we called it the cheese store. And we get these big giant 10-pound blocks of American cheese, and we get a 50-pound bag of spaghetti or of macaroni, and we get the 50-pound bag of powdered milk, you know, non-fat dry powdered milk. I still hate powdered milk to this day as a result of that, and love macaroni and cheese as a result of that. And then he got a job at a tool and die shop, a good union job, and everything changed for us. And it was just a remarkable thing. It was truly a remarkable thing. Kelly, thank you for sharing your story. Great to hear from you. Thank you. Jim in San Diego. Hey, Jim, what's on your mind?
Good. I just was listening intently to the last conversation and similar experience. But my question is when you talk about poverty, and I agree with your talk about how people have to... you know, money invested will help it stunts the less privileged among us. But when you talk to the people that, I guess that they always say builds a cycle of dependency, the food stamp program, Section 8 housing, et cetera, you constantly hear, well, why do they get that? Why, you know, I'll go into the corporations, welfare, et cetera. But what I'm asking of you is what argument you give to a working class, middle class person who says, I work my fanny off every single day. Why? And I go to the grocery store, and while I'm in the grocery store, I see somebody that has a nice car, or this is what they tell me, a nice car, and then they, you know, they have food stamps. Right. So that's what I would really like some arguments to help.
The whole cycle of dependency thing, Jim, is BS. And all you have to do is look at history to see that. If, you know, when Henry Ford... back in the 1900s, when Henry Ford first started manufacturing in Dearborn, Michigan, and I grew up in Michigan. I was not alive in 1913, but, you know, I'm familiar with the history of the state. Detroit was an undeveloped and relatively poor area. Now, they didn't have poverty programs back then, but there were a lot of people in poverty. And the main story of the day was people are in poverty because they choose to be. I mean, that's the story that we inherited from the Victorians, and it's the story that they inherited from the medievalists, from the feudal, you know, the Dark Ages, and it's a story that they inherited from arguably Gilgamesh. I mean, it's a long old story used to justify keeping some people poor and making some people rich. But the fact of the matter is that when Henry Ford started building large automobile factories and started hiring people, and then the Dodge brothers did, and the Chrysler family did, and everybody started doing that in Detroit. Suddenly, Detroit became literally, from the 1940s to the 1970s, the most prosperous city in the United States. There was no more welfare dependency in Detroit because there were jobs. And then the jobs went away. Now there's no more jobs. Now you've got welfare dependency, or you've got people on welfare. It's not, people don't sit around going, geez, I wish I could just, you know, get some food stamps. People want jobs. But the fact of the matter is that the plutocrats in our society, the billionaire class in our society, the multinational class in our society, has decided that those jobs are better done in Vietnam or Nicaragua or China or you know, some other third world country where they can pay pennies on the dollar for the labor, where they don't have to deal with environmental regulations and all that kind of stuff, because we did away with tariffs so they can just import the stuff back in the United States. And it's just fine with them that people in Detroit right now are competing with $3 an hour labor in China.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And that $3 an hour labor in China, of course, not only drives down wages in the United States, but also wipes out jobs, which throws people onto welfare. So, you know, you've got the problem wrong. And welcome back, Paul, in Sparta, Wisconsin. watching Free Speech on DirecTV. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind today?
I'm a kind of different topic than everybody else here, but I just happened to watching the Philippine channels.
Oh, really?
And I see where President Duterte has just pardoned 16 cops that killed a mayor for supposedly being a drug dealer in his jail cell.
Wow.
All these cops pleaded guilty to murder. Duterte pardoned them, and now he's given them promotions. So, you know, I just wanted to let you know what, you know, supposedly our allies, our friends, are doing to people, and, you know, our president doesn't seem to care. He thinks it's okay.
Well, and neither does our press. I mean, can you imagine if Putin had done the same thing?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's like, you know, it's our hysteria, our outrage is highly selective right now, which is, you know, pretty mind-boggling. If you know, I mean, Saudi Arabia does worse than that on a daily basis. And you've got, you know, this, in fact, the story that I was going to open the second hour with and it got buried was there are 300,000 children in Yemen right now who are starving to death, looking like stick figures. Talk about permanent stunting, you know, damaging people's development. 500,000 people in total and several million refugees right now as a result of the Saudi army bombing the crap out of Yemen. And, you know, because of the Houthi rebellion, because of the Shia rebellion, essentially, and the Sunnis are not happy with this. And it's like, and they're doing it with American weapons. It's like our knowledge of things. And as you point out, Duterte, I mean, he's you know, empowered not just cops. He actually hires professional hitmen and women to, you know, at $200 a pop to go out and shoot people in the head who are using drugs.
Well, yeah, it's $200 a head for normal people, but if you get a celebrity or a mayor or something like that, it's $500.
Oh my. Yeah, and this is and then Donald Trump calls him up and says, "You're doing a great job with your war on drugs there, President Duterte."
Right. Right.
It's like, "Whoa."
Well, hey, thanks for everything you do.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. And thanks for the information. That's bizarre. I'm going to have to try and find the story there. That's amazing. But I remember when Richard Green was on this program, an old friend of mine. Richard is a lawyer and a former talk show host. He used to have a show on Air America Radio. And he's basically a coach for people who do public speaking. He was Princess Diana's speech coach, for example. I mean, you know, famous people. And Richard sat in the chair right next to me the week before the election in the Philippines. And he had been in the Philippines as a consultant to the, quote, Hillary Clinton of the Philippines, the guy that everybody thought was going to win, the mainstream candidate. And he said that Duterte was running a Donald Trump campaign. And Duterte actually referred to himself as the Donald Trump of the Philippines. So that's what he called himself. And of course, there's a Trump Tower in Manila, in the capital city of the Philippines. So Duterte and Trump are like this, right, over Trump Tower. The Qatari government, on the other hand, refused to give Jared Kushner a $500 million loan so that he could pay off his mortgage on 666 Fifth Avenue. And some would suggest the result of that is that the Trump administration is now, you know, dumping all over Qatar and Saudi Arabia's help. It's just mind-boggling. Welcome back, Tom. I do want to talk. Actually, I was going to do it at the top of the hour. I've got a couple of stories here that are pretty mind-boggling, but this is the big one, I think. Yemen. This is I got this off Al Jazeera this morning. Yemen's unfathomable pain and suffering. And if you have a web browser and you can open up the Al Jazeera website, the pictures that go with this are just heartbreaking. We're seeing no coverage of this that I can tell in the American media, because Yemen is being bombed mercilessly by U.S. ally Saudi Arabia using U.S. weapons, including cluster bombs, which are banned by the United Nations. They're killing children. They're killing families. There's a 500,000 children who are on the edge of starvation right now. And that's why I said the pictures are just, you know, horrible. You've got 300,000 people, according to the United Nations, who have cholera right now. Cholera kills by causing a diarrhea, unstoppable diarrhea. You die of dehydration in 2 or 3 days as a result of contracting the cholera bacteria. And it's a waterborne bacteria. And it gets into the water from feces, and it comes out of the water, and it infects the gut. United Nations officials, this is from the story in Al Jazeera. United Nations officials have warned that the conflict in the Arab world's poorest nation, Yemen, is intensifying daily, with armed groups expanding, hundreds of thousands facing a cholera epidemic, and 7 million people on the cusp of famine. It's amazing. Special envoy to Yemen from the UN Security Council, Ismail Olaj Sheikh Ahmed. He called on all parties to act for the sake of peace, saying excuses are unacceptable, especially when the solutions are in plain sight. In the same meeting, UN Humanitarian Chief Stephen O'Brien said the warring parties and their outside backers, now that would be the United States, we're backing Saudi Arabia. Did you know that? You didn't see that on the evening news? In the same meeting, the Saudis used to own a chunk of Fox News. I don't know if they still do. I think they don't any longer, but they used to own 7% of it. In the same meeting, UN Humanitarian Chief Stephen O'Brien said the warring parties and their outside backers should feel deeply guilty at driving a worsening conflict that has exposed millions of Yemeni civilians to unfathomable pain and suffering, including 7 million people now on the cusp of famine. He urged the Security Council to lean more heavily and effectively on the parties, that would be us, and those outside Yemen who are leading this policy in action. Well, the principal parties, that would be Saudi Arabia. On Tuesday, the International Committee of the Red Cross reported that suspected cholera cases have now surpassed 300,000. We have a screaming disaster going. Meanwhile, we were talking about poverty and its impact on children. One of the aspects of poverty is a lack of access to resources that people who do not live in poverty generally have access to. For example, high quality nutrition. I mean, that was the essence of pretty much everything that I shared with you earlier. But also healthcare. And also contraception. Now, in Texas, there were Planned Parenthood clinics all over Texas. And they served a large chunk of the low-income Texas population. And 60%, in just one county, Gregg County alone, the local health center lost 60% of its family planning funding. And guess what happened? Teen abortion rates went up 161% from 2013 to 2016 in 3 years. So what is happening in Texas right now, Texas was one of the very first states that succeeded in essentially defunding Planned Parenthood and services that provide contraception to particularly low-income women and girls and teenagers. And once they defunded contraception, the abortion rate has exploded. Why? Well, because unplanned pregnancies have exploded. The greatest rise in abortion rates occurred in rural areas where access to affordable family planning was already scarce. In the first 3 years after, this is by Laura Bassett in today's Huffington Post. In the first 3 years after Texas Republicans slashed the family planning budget in 2011 and shut down more than 80 women's health clinics, the abortion rate among teenagers in the state rose 3% over what it would have been had the clinics remained open. Rick Perry, when he slashed funding for these things, said, he was doing it to ensure, and I quote him, to ensure abortions are as rare as possible under existing law. Well, actually, it had the opposite result. And as I point out, in just Gregg County, one of the poorer counties, the abortion rate increased not 3%, 191%. This is the insanity of the Republican health care plan that the media is ignoring, that is going to get dropped. Well, they're not completely, but this is a big deal. They want to do to America what Rick Perry did to Texas. We should wake up.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
And speak out and fight back and stand for our values and be more and more politically. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Some great tweets on the topics that we've been talking about today. Mr. John John says, many folks who use food stamps come in a nice car, often get a ride. I've taken folks in my car and I get strange looks. Sam Davidson says, Tom, it's sad when a caller asks you to explain why people are on welfare. He didn't ask about the real problem, corporate welfare. Brilliant. That's a brilliant, you know, it's like anytime anybody says welfare, we should point out, you know, we're subsidizing just the fossil fuel industry in this country to the tune of $300 billion a year. Rusty Hansen says, Tom, I'm a veteran working for AmeriCorps, making only $12,000 a year. I have a newer car and I get food stamps and I work damn hard. The guy doesn't even know the other person's story. Just because you're in a decent car doesn't mean you're making enough dollars. Jan Walsh tweets a picture of her grandson or his grandson. I'm not sure. I think Jan is a she. Saying, my grandson, born without carotid arteries, reached his lifetime insurance cap when he was one. Medicaid and the ACA ensure he lives. Pablo Flexcobar. It's got to be a handle. Anyhow, he says, even conservative estimates put welfare fraud at 6%. These people they see in Mercedes-Benz with food stamps are outnumbered by 95%. Yeah, I agree. And the numbers that I've seen are 2 or 3%. And, you know, there's a hell of a lot more fraud and waste in the Pentagon budget than there is in any welfare budget. And, you know, not to mention all the fraud and waste in the upper echelons of every major corporation in the United States. Patty, in Harstein Island, Washington. Am I saying that right, Patty?
You got it just perfect, Tom.
Thank you.
I have a simple ditty to the Supreme Court concerning Citizens United and then an added serious note.
Okay.
So let me get my twang on here. Oh, my judges, most supreme, you have all gone and forgotten that you are but one of three branches, mighty branches. You're the lowest of the three on the tree the people planted, and we named democracy. And my one added little note is a question I'd love to hear you ask your audience is, can a corporation shed a single tear over a fallen soldier's grave? They are not people, my friends.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll believe that a corporation is a person when Texas executes one. There you go. Patty, well done. And hey, you can hold it. You can carry a tune pretty well. Thank you for listening to KBCS, and thanks for the call, Patty, and the song. Paul in Lucerne, California. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I got two quick things to say real quick. One, if you're a progressive Democrat, please join your local party. We need you bad.
Amen.
Okay. Now, two, I have a question for you. I remember hearing about the 60 to 100 megaton methane bomb that could be released by the Arctic Ocean. I remember hearing about two lakes in Africa that released a significant amount of gas. One was caused by a landslide, wiped out the whole village. One, the whole lake overturned for the big explosion. A couple people took off, came back, the whole village was dead.
Right.
And then looking around, they found the lake, they found fish everywhere. And what it was CO2 gas.
Yeah, I was going to say, one of them was carbon dioxide, the other was sulfur dioxide, wasn't it?
Yeah, and these gases leaked out of this lake, drifted down the little valley, and suffocated people.
Right, because they're heavier than our air, so they settle.
And 100 megaton bubbling out of the ocean, doesn't that have the potential to drift over and suffocate a village?
No, because methane is actually lighter than most of the atmosphere. Methane rises all the way up to the stratosphere where it combines with hydroxyl molecules, OH molecules, and breaks down to water vapor and carbon dioxide.
So the only problem is if it bubbled up underneath a oil rig and somebody was.
Well, that's what happened. That's what happened with the. That's what happened in the Gulf of Mexico with the BP rig with the. What was that rig called? The Deepwater Horizon. Yeah, that was a methane explosion. They apparently were drilling through beds of methane or into methane because you know as it first comes up, it's frozen. It's like ice, and once it starts to melt. It doesn't convert from ice from a solid to a liquid. It converts from a solid to a gas, and so it occupies. You know, I don't know if it's 100 times more space or 1,000.
That would have the chance to suffocate somebody because the ice crystals come washing onto the surface.
No, it wouldn't. Warm. It wouldn't suffocate. It's the danger of methane is global warming. It's 80 times more dangerous than carbon dioxide. You know, when it gets into the atmosphere, and it takes 20 years to begin. Yeah, that's the half life is 20 years. But what happened with the ExxonMobil rig was that those methane crystals started coming up, and they started as the pressure dropped and the temperature increased, they melted, and the pipe was not sufficiently insulated. It was supposed to be insulated with a layer of concrete, and apparently Halliburton or whoever did it didn't do it right, and so it just blew through the side of the pipe and bang, off to the races. So
okay,
or at least that's my understanding of it. But yeah, those two examples you gave are two of maybe a half a dozen in the last dozen years or so, last 10 years or so. There was even one in the United States where there was a release of sulfur dioxide or carbon dioxide, basically volcanic gases from a lake that probably had a deep fissure in it that went down into the earth where the gases were coming out. They killed a bunch of people because they're heavy gases. Methane wouldn't do that, like I said. I mean, the classic example is the Porter Canyon Ranch thing. Porter Ranch or Porter Canyon Ranch in Los Angeles was a dome that they had pumped all the oil out of, and they'd filled it with natural gas. It was and they had gas lines running through there, and one of these things burst and started spraying natural gas, methane, into the atmosphere. Took a couple days before anybody figured it out. They figured it out because people downwind were getting sick. I was there, with Mark Ruffalo and Norman Lear. We were actually there. We were down the road from there with a bunch of people from there who were like fleeing, who were telling stories of their kids having, you know, sores and coughing up blood and getting sick. But that was from the natural gas and all the high fraction hydrocarbons that were with it. But it was just pouring out of there. I mean, it's kind of a different thing. But I get your point, Paul, and I think this is all important stuff for us to be talking about. Thank you for the call, and thanks for bringing it up. Marie in Albuquerque, New Mexico, listening on KABQ. Hey, Marie, what's up? Marie? Okay, I'm going to put Marie on hold. She's on line two, Nate. And let's try Russell in Hickory Hills, Illinois. Hey, Russell, what's up?
Hi, Tom, you're talking about ruthless. This is a bozo we got. Browner, our governor, spit nails because we finally got a budget because the Republicans overrode his veto.
Right.
And now, because, you know, colleges weren't going to open down in their area. So here's his new plan, Tom. He's going to run on re-election, blow up every union contract, you know, no pensions, no health and welfare. We'll start from scratch because you people are making too much money.
Right.
But we've got to have billions for my friends and tax cuts here. You know, I mean, the guy is just, he's just in concrete. No unions. He doesn't want the schools in Chicago to get a dime. He's going to veto another bill for school funding that they got to override. I mean, the guy is just hates unions.
Bruce Browner is just another heartless Republican greed head and probably a coke head as well, as in, you know, being funded or supported by the Koch brothers. I don't know that specifically. Another greed head. Russell,
you're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And to the people of Illinois, you have my sympathy and you have my encouragement to get politically active. We'll be back. And welcome back. Kathy in Minneapolis, Minnesota, listening. Kathy just dropped off the phone. Maybe she was trying to push her mute button or something. Let's see here. Lisa in Venice, Florida, listening on iTunes. Hey, Lisa, what's up? Lisa?
Sorry, I'm speaking.
Thank you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hey, thanks. Thanks to you and all your crew, actually, because the last months of craziness have really been trying my sanity.
Welcome to the club.
It's been awful. There's so many issues to talk about, but I really like to get back to the net neutrality.
Yeah.
There's been two things that have been the scariest to me since November, and that is us getting into another war or the end of net neutrality. And the main reason for that is I'm just very concerned about censorship, not just them slowing down.
About what? I'm sorry, I missed the word.
Censorship.
Oh, because censorship. I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah. Your phone is not the very best, but thank you, Lisa. Censorship. Okay. I agree. I mean, the net neutrality is essential to maintain an informed populace.
And what would be the new Fox News of the internet and just completely muzzling any truth out there? I mean, not just slowing avenues like you down, but completely closing them.
Yeah. Comcast owns MSNBC, and Andy Lack is slowly but steadily turning MSNBC into a right-wing network. And if net neutrality is blown up and you get your services from Comcast, the next Fox may well be MSNBC. It was back before, 2003 or 2004. MSNBC was big champions for George W. Bush and for the war in Iraq and all that kind of stuff. It was by and large, a right-wing network, and they're going back to those right-wing roots. And if Comcast is your internet service provider and they own MSNBC and MSNBC becomes the new Fox News, they can deliver that to you in high def, super easy, super fast, right there, right on your computer, anytime you want, complete with a little button up in the corner so you can always access it because they're your ISP. But guess what? It's going to be really hard to get anybody else, CBS, ABC, other networks. This program, Comcast, if they do away with net neutrality, Comcast, they may not do it, but they certainly will have the ability to say, no, we're not going to carry progressive programming into the tens of millions of homes that we provide cable to.
I don't know how we'd fight anything that's going on if we don't even know what's going on, and it would be that much closer to a dictatorship.
I agree. That said, look at China. Or to Hong Kong, anyway. It's an instructive tale. There is still resistance to tyranny, and there's resistance to internet censorship. And the Chinese government and administration have gotten extremely brutal. Well, they've been extremely brutal since the Cultural Revolution. And I hope that the United States would never go down that road, but. God only knows. I mean, when the plutocrats entirely own the media, all bets are off. Lisa, thank you for the call. I share your concern. Big time. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Harmon here with you. Let's check in with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today. This report brought to you by Ellen Ratner's new book, Loving What You Do, and by goatsfortheoldgoat.com. On the line with us, Victoria Jones with Talk Media News. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom.
So what's going on in the world today?
Oh, there's a tremendous amount going on in the world. We should start with healthcare, and then we should move over to Paul.
Okay.
Well, Senate Republicans have released their newest version of the healthcare bill, and Lindsey Graham has his own version of the healthcare bill. The newest version of the Senate Republican bill moves toward Ted Cruz's version, which lets insurers offer health plans that do not comply with all Affordable Care Act regulations, as long as they offer ones or one that do. Ted Cruz does say that he will now vote to advance debate on the bill. Rob Portman of Ohio has said that he will not. He's a no.
Wow.
Yeah,
so if Murkowski and Collins hold strong, that's it.
Yeah, that's it. Now, we don't know. I've not seen, I'm on my Twitter feed obsessively, I've not seen that yet. So it may have come out, but I've not seen it. so I don't know. It's fairly fast moving.
Right.
But there are, you know, they have increased opioid treatment funds by another $45 billion. That's something that was very important to. 25 minutes ago, Susan Collins. Still deep cuts to Medicaid and Senate bill will vote no.
Wow. So it's good. Yeah. They're going to need one more no vote to kill the thing.
Yeah, yeah. She says she's ready to work with Republicans and Democratic colleagues to fix flaws in ACA.
Yeah. I mean, what this, just so everybody understands what we're talking about, the Ted Cruz variation is the equivalent of you or me, Victoria, walking into a used car dealer and, saying, I'd kind of like that $5,000 car over there. That looks pretty good, but I can't quite afford $5,000. And the guy says, hey, I can get you into a car for $100. You know, he takes you over, shows you a clunker. You know, the brakes don't work. The transmission doesn't work. But, hey, it's $100. That's basically what Ted Cruz is saying. I can get you in a health care plan for $100 a month. Doesn't include hospitalization. Won't pay your doctor. Doesn't cover ambulance services. But it will pay something. Maybe.
Yes. Now, Axios is reporting that Rand Paul and Susan Collins are no's. They're not reporting that Portman is, so maybe he's a no, a maybe, but Rand Paul and Susan Collins are no's.
Wow.
So that's where we are so far on that. So that's developing. Meantime, over in France, President Trump and Melania Trump are over there for the 100th anniversary of America entering World War I for Bastille Day celebrations tomorrow. And if I may just say, in an aside, before we get to the substance of the story, because we may run out of time, I do have to whine, because I watched the president's joint press conference with President Macron, and I understand that the emphasis is on America coming in and on the old relationship with France and how important this is, and France and America in the war. But you would have thought from the remarks of President Trump that that there were no other countries fighting in this war. And I would like to point out that Britain had been fighting in the war for 3 years before America came in and lost nearly an entire generation of young men, as did Germany. Little Belgium, valiant little Belgium, have been fighting. Other countries have been fighting for 3 years.
Which war are we talking about here?
World War One.
World War One. Thank you.
And there was no mention at all that there had been.
Well, Trump is ahistoric. He has no grasp of history.
President Trump actually said something really extraordinary. He said France is America's oldest ally. A lot of people don't know that.
You know, this is like, you know, healthcare is difficult. A lot of people don't know that. It's like he keeps revealing his own ignorance and attributing it to the majority of Americans.
That I think is a very astute comment. It's something that crossed my mind when he said that. It's as though he's attributing that to a lot, you know, that.
Yeah.
Something that is making the rounds of France. It's on the French government's Facebook account. Trump, Macron, and their wives chatting. Trump at one point, this is audio captured, turns to Brigitte Macron, the first lady, and tells her, "You're in such good shape." He repeats the observation to the French president before turning back to the French lady and remarking, "Beautiful."
Wow. And she's 20-some-odd years older than her husband, which is the subtext of that message.
Yes.
Basically, what he was saying is you look pretty good for your age.
Yes, and the Macron's age difference is identical to that of Donald and Melania Trump.
So did she turn to Donald and say, you know, relative to your wife, you look pretty good too? This is terrible. Victoria, from the European point of view, and I realize you're an American, but you were born and raised in the UK. From the European point of view, is there some weirdness or irony or whatever the appropriate word is of this conflation of Bastille Day and Donald Trump?
Yes.
Do you want to just leave it at that?
Yes, I think I do. I think the whole thing is weird.
Yeah, I do too. And I just could imagine all these French, and this is not a guillotine joke. I don't even want to go to the Kathy Griffin stuff or any of that kind of thing. But just, you know, the Bastille Day was the beginning of the revolution and or part of the revolution. And it just anyway, nothing.
Yes, I have not even Googled whether people have, you know, talked about tumbrils or anything like that, but it is.
Awesome. Yeah, and we've got our own Maximilian Robespierre here and Steve Bannon. Anyhow, moving along, what else is going on in the world today?
Yes, Every Town for Gun Safety, Mike Bloomberg's organization, says that while Republicans in Washington keep promising rollbacks of gun control laws, but they haven't done much, Every Town for Gun Safety says that they have had a lot of success in new restrictions on the state level. And they're saying a lot of that's coming with the support of Republicans and signatures of Republican governors. And they say Louisiana, Nevada, New Jersey, North Dakota, Tennessee, and Utah have all passed new restrictions on firearms for domestic abusers. And according to a new report card from Every Town Out Today, that brings the total to 23 of states that have enhanced the laws around domestic abusers. Hawaii, Washington State, and Deep Red Tennessee have got new laws to notify law enforcement when anyone fails to pass a background check, tries to buy a gun. Mm. And anyway, there are some very interesting things on this. They also track 20 of 22 states which did not pass bills that would have eliminated requirements for permits to carry guns, a top priority for the NRA. And they say they're claiming victory in gun lobby losses, noting that 17 out of 18 states rejected bills to allow guns in schools, and 14 of 16 states rejected bills to allow guns on college campuses.
The worm turns. I mean, these states are being ravaged by guns. Gun violence is one of the leading causes of death in the United States. It certainly facilitates suicide. Children dying at the hands of guns. It's one of the leading causes of death of children. I think that in rural America, they're figuring it out.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont has thrown his weight behind former NAACP President Ben Jealous's bid for Maryland governor today.
Oh, great. Great.
Yeah.
Louise and I were talking about this last week, about how we need to get Ben Jealous on the air because he's such a good guy. He's been on the show a lot of times. And what an amazingly smart man.
Yes. So now he's got some tough contenders in the Democratic primary, but nevertheless, I think he's going to make a very compelling case.
Yeah.
In Maryland. Yeah. Yeah. So that's going on. Also, the Department of Justice today announced today it's charged more than 400 people, including 56 doctors, with health care fraud that cost taxpayers approximately $1.3 billion.
Whoa.
Mostly for opioid fraud, scams.
Wow.
More than 100 of them scammed in the largest such fraud crackdown in U.S. history.
That's incredible. Well, it's a start. Victoria Jones with Talk Media News. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you very much.
Good talking to you. Have a great afternoon. We'll be right back with Dr. Gabriel. That's later on. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.